walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal, come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guests today are Brian Cunningham and Douglas Sirup, co-directors of Dogs on the Inside, a documentary that tracks the relationships between neglected and abused dogs and the prison inmates who are fostering them at a Massachusetts prison under a program called Don't Throw Us Away. A little over an hour, the film provides a 360-degree view of that program, including rescuers, dog transporters, the inmates at North Central Correctional Institution who care for the dogs, and the trainer who are among the folks who assist the inmates in preparing their canine charges to eventually be successfully adopted. Fundamentally, though, the focus of Dogs on the Inside clearly becomes the dogs and their inmate dog handlers. And as the film unspools, it becomes about how they're helping each other heal and cultivating second chances at better lives. We'll delve into various aspects of Dogs on the Inside when we speak with filmmakers Brian Cunningham and Douglas Sirup live in just a moment here on Talking Animals. Also later in the show, I'll speak briefly with Karen Hubby of the Animal Coalition of Tampa, or ACT, about a new challenge facing the organization that provides low-cost spay-neuter surgeries and other medical services to dogs and cats. You may recall that about a year ago, an arsonist set their building on fire, causing significant damage and claiming the lives of three cats who live there. They relocated to a new building, but the owner of that building has now informed ACT they need to move out by April 1st, so they're seeking help in finding a new space or any suggested solution that would enable them to continue providing these services. Additionally, near the end of the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. We'll be offering a pair of tickets to see guitarist extraordinaire Tommy Emmanuel, who's performing at the Capitol Theater this Friday, March 6th. Let's move now, though, into our conversation with Brian and Douglas about their documentary Dogs on the Inside, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Brian Cunningham and Douglas Sirup to Talking Animals. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Do I have you both there?
Yeah, you're Doug here. It's Brian.
Okay, cool. I guess maybe we lost you there temporarily. But so you guys are both here. Thanks for joining me today on Talking Animals. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having us so much.
Absolutely. So by now, those of us who are truly interested in animals have probably seen a blog post, a newspaper article, maybe a TV news piece about prison programs through which inmates care for dogs. You guys made a film about it. Brian, I'll start with you. Why? What drew you to this world to be explored as a documentary film?
Well, we were looking around one day and came upon an article about a prison dog training program that really blew us away, in the sense that it took dogs that needed a second chance and were either homeless or sitting for weeks, months on end inside of a shelter, and gave them a second chance at a prison with inmates that were close to being released. And we saw these wonderful parallels between the two lives and thought, well, we've got to see this firsthand. It's such a brilliant idea. Let's see how it is in real life. And when Doug and I approached Michelle Riccio, the founder of the program, she loved the idea of it being turned into a documentary film to both, highlight what was going on there, but also kind of it's a commentary on the human-animal bond, this timeless connection we share with dogs, and the transformative power that dogs can have in our lives, as we saw in the inmates as they changed over the course of our filming.
For sure. And by the way, you guys, I may say a specific name, but otherwise I hope you'll feel free to jump in or elaborate on each other's responses, even if I don't necessarily cite you by name. So why North Central Correctional Institution in Gardner, Massachusetts? Was it strictly geography, or were there other factors involved?
Well, yeah, we were based in Connecticut at the time, and it was geographical, definitely, because we knew we could get there a few hours away. But also, they were one of the first. They're a really progressive prison system, and they really welcomed this program into it. And we hadn't seen many across the country when we started filming in 2011. Since that time, they've started to grow, and people are seeing that really does help give dogs a second chance, but also the recidivism rate go down with inmates that are in these types of programs because of the experience they have caring for another creature.
Walk us through the process, though, for getting permission to film at North Central. I mean, typically, you know, anytime you go into a prison for anything, much less with a camera, it's tricky, or there's usually at least more than a few obstacles. How did that work?
It was Doug and I started drawing up questions for, you know, things we wanted to get out of the inmates to humanize them. And that was initially our process as far as we were hoping to get a bunch of questions approved. And I would say like 2/3 of them came back X'd out. So Doug and I, you know, took a deep breath and regrouped.
I didn't mean to interrupt there, but when you say X'd out, does that mean like, hey, they're not answering this, or you can't ask that, or what do you mean X'd out?
Yeah, they felt like they crossed them out as if we couldn't ask them. They really wanted us to stay within a very narrow confines of this prison training program, which was understandable. It was great to have them on board to begin with, but we had to, Doug and I had to kind of explore ways to get a bigger story out of the film because of that. And to their credit, we started having great conversations with inmates there, and it led down avenues that initially were kind of off limits. And the prison system allowed us to go into who these men were, and also as they spoke for the dogs in the sense of what the dogs were experiencing, what the dogs were feeling, because they could relate to it. So anyway, I'll pass it off to Doug to get his consent in on this as well. But we started from that perspective, and then there was obviously the red tape.
Well, I'd be curious then, maybe Doug, you can speak to this as well as anything you might want to add to what Brian said about what sort of ground rules were established once you guys got the go-ahead.
Yeah, I think just to add on to that, one of the most challenging parts of making this film, it was that the prison only granted us 3 days of filming to get all the footage and all the interviews completed. So when you're faced with that and you're trying to make a feature-length documentary, it's rather challenging, to say the least. We had to use our time wisely, and you know, we just made the best of it, and you know, I think we pulled it off. But it was certainly a challenge just between Brian and myself. It was just the two of us. We didn't have the luxury of, you know, a large film crew or anything, and assistance to help us throughout the day. So we had to manage our schedules pretty tightly.
So they didn't budge on that. So the film that we see now was all shot within that 3-day window they initially gave you?
Correct. Everything, all the footage at the prison. Yes.
Oh, I see. Right. There was, yeah, there's other parts of the film, but still, I mean, so much, of course, is centered at the prison wow, that's really remarkable to know you guys got all that done within that 3-day thing. It must have been, yeah, some very very effective scheduling and time management then, for sure. At the same time, no matter how you slice it, even if it's just those 3 days of filming, I mean, you are hanging in a prison. I mean, were there uncomfortable moments at all, or was it pretty straightforward because you had the specific mission of trying to get the story of the dogs and the inmates caring for them?
Yeah, we started this off. Oh, sorry, go for it, yeah.
Sorry. You know, there really was not any type of uncomfortable moment, surprisingly. I think a lot of us have, you know, stereotypical images of what prison environment is like. And you know, you have preconceptions and whatnot. And you know, as soon as we arrived on the ground, we went there at first without cameras, just so we could, you know, go up and shake their hands and establish, you know, some type of level of trust with each of the inmates and meet the dogs, and just let them know that, you know, we're not here to exploit you or bait your story in any negative way. We want to try to capture your story of rehabilitating these dogs and yourself at the same time, and we want to try to capture that on film.
I definitely want to get into some specifics about that and some of the stories that really learn about the inmates and the dogs. But one thing, I guess, because I've been hearing and reading about these sort of programs for some time, the topic of the film didn't catch me off guard, although, of course, I was happy to see that there now was a documentary about a program like this. So it didn't surprise me, and it certainly didn't bother me because, if anything, I was enthused, as you point out in the film, or the film points out at some point, these sort of programs really help where rescues are sort of limited by sheer numbers. They can only rescue and foster a certain number, and then they're tapped out. And so this is another source, really, of fostering and adoption that otherwise those dogs wouldn't probably have access to. Still, I was interested earlier this morning. I posted just a little blurb about this, the interview on the show. One of the comments was that the prison is no place for an abused dog, citing the noise and the concrete. And I wrote back nicely at least, saying, hey, I think the interview and or watching the film might be surprised that that's really not the case. But still, did you guys encounter any sort of comparable responses along the way or objections, like just to the notion that the dogs that initially, in many cases, were abused and neglected to begin with, were then spending time under this program in a prison setting?
Well, I can tackle that one. I think that we have heard that from time to time about it's the right place to do it. But we, adamantly believe the opposite of that. I think it's the best place to do it because you're looking at a dire situation with animal overpopulation in the country. And this alleviates the stress on the shelters, as you mentioned, and it creates this unique foster home setting where there are qualified inmates to work with these dogs, both men and women. And in the case of our film, these are male inmates that have demonstrated a commitment to getting back on track, rehabilitating themselves, and paying for the crime they committed. So if you want to rehabilitate people, I believe that compassion is a huge component in that. And this facilitates, this is like a direct line to compassion when you have a dog and you're getting unconditional love and it's non-judgmental. I guess to get more specific about the comment about there's loud noises, and there's all these different things. We found it to be an incredibly humane setting. I wouldn't say that this is how every prison is across the country. You see a lot of examples of steel bars and cell blocks and things like that. But where they were in a minimum security facility, it was almost like a dorm setting for these men because they had earned the right to live in those conditions, and they were close to being released. That the dogs lived, they slept in a crate right by the foot of the inmate's bed, and that's really solidified the bond with the inmates even more. So, and it helps rehabilitate the dogs because now they have a person that they can really trust. And they have a group, there's a collective of these inmates that are in the program, and it's a privilege for them. So they really value this privilege. They treat the dogs really lovingly and caringly. And in turn, the dogs can forget about their past. And that's the great thing about dogs. They have a really short memory when it comes to those things. So it takes time, but they can really overcome that adversity. And I think the inmates see that as well. And then they feel like they can overcome adversity. So there's a lot of good things going on with these prisons taking foster, dogs into their system there and rehabilitating them.
For sure. And I think a couple of the points that you made there, too, that A, this is a minimum security facility, and B, in most cases, at least these inmates were obviously not only had been well-behaved during their stint there, but I think in most cases or many cases were sort of close to being released. So some of the stereotypical things of like the most horrible, noisy, clanging, awful, violent prison things that some of us can conjure up didn't really apply to the North Central Correctional Institution. So
No. Yeah. And the dogs kind of do a lot of those stereotypes because people that might fight otherwise get along. We saw that at where we were.
Yeah. There's a point. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just two members of rival gangs came together and actually became friends because the dogs brokered this peace and the men put aside their differences to take care of the dogs. So there's all these unintended benefits that lie outside the obvious benefits of these programs.
Well, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guests are Brian Cunningham and Douglas Sirup, co-directors of Dogs on the Inside, a documentary about a program whereby prison inmates foster neglected or abused dogs, preparing them to be adopted. If you'd like to ask Brian and Doug a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Yeah, so the film really kind of tells the tale of Don't Throw Us Away, the program under which these inmates do foster and care for these animals, sort of by telling the stories of a select few dogs and the inmates who are sort of charged with caring for them and sharing their cells, you noted, and occasionally their bed, and everything that goes with that, including a lot of training and other things. Because, again, it's not just the dogs are hanging with these inmates. The idea is really a very prescribed path to find forever homes for these dogs. But still, given that the dogs tend to be strays who've been neglected, if not abused, and that the inmates have assorted tough stories of their own, I guess it's no surprise that the film ultimately is I found at least, quite moving and poignant. With that in mind, I'd like to ask each of you guys to identify which dog for you constitutes kind of the heart and soul of the film and why, and then also the same question, sort of which inmate dog handler for you is kind of the emotional center of the film and why.
Doug, you want to jump in on that one?
Sure. I would have to say, and this is, comments that we've heard from has to do with comments that we've heard from a lot of people who have seen the film and even the trailer. It's the dog in particular that really resonates throughout the film would be Sadie.
Yeah.
Just because she's just the sweetest dog. You can see it just by looking into her eyes, and you can see that, you know, she may have had a rough past, but from the start of us filming to by adoption day, at the end of the film, the transformation is just so apparent because that, you know, she starts out, her tail's between her legs, and she's shy. She doesn't really want to go to anyone but Rob, one of the inmates in the film, who is her dog handler for the process during Sadie's stay. And just being able to capture that on film, seeing and believing in the resiliency of these dogs, it's really, for us, really inspirational.
And can I ask you maybe just to elaborate a little bit more on Sadie's story, like what her background was before she came to the program?
Sure. When Sadie was first found by the fosters out of Mississippi who are featured in the film, they found her just thrown in a dumpster and with her puppies. So Sadie was fostered by those dog rescuers, and then she was luckily shipped up to the shelter in Massachusetts, and then she stayed and was trained and rehabilitated by Rob, one of the inmates at the prison.
And then let's get the other response of a dog, unless you guys both feel that Sadie's the dog, and then we'll get into the inmate handlers that maybe struck you particularly as emotionally in terms of the film.
Sure. I would say I agree with Doug. Sadie really is the heart of the film from a canine perspective. But I also really like Cash, who was also rescued from the South, and he endured getting cigarette burns on his backside, which is absolutely unbelievable to us. And
yeah.
To follow up on Doug's point of resiliency, he was scared at first, and then he created a really strong bond, and that's a credit to the inmate training him. So he was a cute dog and a sweet, sweet dog, so kind of wanted to take him home afterwards, but he was already adopted, so what can you do?
For sure. And then how about for kind of the inmate, for each of you, sort of heart and soul of the film on the inmate side, inmate dog handler side?
I think we have to both say Candido. He's our main character, and for those that have seen the movie poster, he's on the front of the poster with his dog, whose name was Byram. I think he kind of serves as a narrator to the film, constantly weighing in throughout the course about the progress of the dogs, about the life of being in prison and being an inmate. And also a big part of the movie is, you know, second chances and hopes and dreams for the future. And he's very philosophical. He's very smart. And we really were fortunate to have him be a part of the film. And there's many a poignant line uttered by Candido throughout the movie.
For sure, yeah. I mean, one, I think it might be in the trailer where he was talking about another dog that's not really featured prominently in the film, but obviously one that he had worked with before, Sammy. And I think he's talking about how, like, frightened or afraid, whatever, Sammy was when he got here. And I said, he said something like, I think in a sense he forgot his past. Something like, I know by seeing that through Sam, nothing's impossible, nothing is impossible. And to me, that was just like, you know, one of many things, like you said, that he just said that were sort of very strong and just worked on so many levels. And at one point, I think he talks about, at that point in the film now, instead of Sammy, he's paired with this dog, Byram, and he's talking about how he talks to Byram all the time, tells him stuff about himself. And it's like he said something like, Byram's like a psychiatrist. And, you know, just things like that, he's really definitely something else, and really kind of grounds the film. I mean, again, there's just, I think, a lot of poignant things going on in that film, but that guy is really remarkable in all kinds of ways. So you know, one of the things that I was really struck by speaking of this is about the film, and I mentioned this on air and actually on Facebook, is you guys really present sort of this, what I call this 360-degree view of the Don't Throw Us Away, you know, noting how many folks contribute to this kind of program. There's rescuers, there's transporters, there's trainers, the inmates, of course, themselves, prison officials, adoption people, and others. And the ripple effect, and you really see again in your film how this all, the whole process transforms them all along the way. It sort of just brings an interesting new wrinkle to the phrase, it takes a village, because there was sort of this palpable spirit of everyone pulling together and wanting the dogs to succeed, and of course wanting the inmates to succeed. and made for some very unlikely comrades. I'm thinking, for example, of, is it Sergeant Lutz? Is that how you pronounce it? The guard there?
Right.
He's a prison guard who seems pretty philosophical about, I guess, maybe being at a minimum security facility and sort of, you know, how it's one step closer to getting back out, something like that, I think he says. But he draws really interesting parallels between the inmates and the dogs. And but also, I mean, there's scenes where he's helping with the dogs. And I was really struck by his sort of fundamental decency and kindness, maybe more so because when I watched the film, it was within a day or so of reading this huge New York Times piece on the brutality of prison guards at Attica, and I just thought, wow, this couldn't be more at the other end of the spectrum.
Right.
So to what extent for you guys does this reflect, like, as an example at least, the kind of magical powers of dogs in general and the sort of transformative powers of seemingly all those who are involved with Don't Throw Us Away?
Doug, do you want to jump on that one?
Yeah, I'll start it off. The 360 view, as you mentioned, is a great way to sum it up because it really is a team effort to help each of these dogs arrive to their forever home. And one of the reasons we filmed in Mississippi was to try to capture, you know, the full story of the journey of each of these dogs, where they're found, who rescues them, and how they're transported up to their forever home ultimately. So it really is a team effort, and the beautiful thing about everyone working as a team in this instance is that everyone benefits. It's just a all around wonderful, wonderful thing, and we're, you know, everyone involved is it's just helping animals, and at the end of the day, that's a beautiful thing.
Another comment there from that sounded like
sure,
there's
sure yeah oh. yeah I would say that too. We were amazed at the situation of the dogs. Where we saw them and where they came from. A lot of the dogs that have manged, a lot of them are on the streets as you've seen the film. And we really wanted to show that because we felt that it would make what you saw at the prison even more remarkable, that these dogs were granted asylum at a prison. It's a very unlikely place for that to happen. And it's really a safe haven for the dogs. And by having a fostering, loving environment like prison, that's where the dogs can actually rehabilitate. And we wanted to show how much effort goes in to saving just one dog's life, and that's what it's going to take if we're going to educate people and move the needle on this issue and let them know that there's a lot of people out there volunteering their time, their money, their weekends to save dogs' lives. And what we need to do is spay and neuter our dogs. We need to find good homes. We need to adopt if we can. And there's so many loving, sweet dogs in shelters right now, and we wanted to show that as well as part of the backstory to the dogs that you were seeing at the prison. So it was very important to us, and thank you very much for saying that at the 360-degree view of it.
Sure. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Brian Cunningham and Douglas Syrup, co-directors of the documentary Dogs on the Inside. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. And should also note that the website for the film is simply dogsontheinside.com. And we do have a caller here. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Talking Animals. A question for the directors?
Yeah, I just had a couple of comments and a question. And
okay.
One is, I'd like to thank the directors and all the people that, work with stray abandoned animals, because the good karma and blessings of every animal and every person that you help will follow you forever, And I wonder, if there's an interest and a movement to pursue this sort of program. I mean, I realize that the prison trend now toward privatization means that there's more unchecked brutality and, a lot fewer efforts toward rehabilitation as opposed to, say, the 80s and so forth. And I think that having a program that would pursue dogs on the inside on a much more, national, state, whatever, wide scale would be a real opportunity to heal some of the wounds between the black and white communities, given the current rage against police brutality in this country, and a lot of animal activists could work with people who are in the prison systems, and it would provide a lot of dialogue, I think, between the two communities. I just wonder if the directors know of any efforts. You know, I know there are lots of animal groups. I mean, I know there are at least five in Tampa. And I wonder if they're interested in pursuing these sorts of liaisons.
Thank you very much for your question. There's a few programs out there we're aware of that we're aligning with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them's called New Leash on Life USA. They're based in Philadelphia, and they actually measure recidivism, where the numbers go from, they drop 50%, the recidivism rate goes down 50% when they, with inmates that work in these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And because you have that data, that it's undeniable that compassion works. And it leads to better results for people, how they're feeling mentally, physically, physiologically.
Yes.
So there is a growing movement to have these programs in prison. And I think another element of your question was the idea of compassion education. And that's something that we're doing on our own with our distributor, Bond 360, is getting the word out, showing that compassion helps people on every level. It's really like the glue of our society. You can choose compassion, or you can choose to be angry or a negative emotion, and one creates really positive results and the other not so much. You know, the other can lead you down the road of going back to jail. And what the dogs, I think, show people is that by being kind, by being sweet, by being understanding and patient, you're going to have better results in life. And that's something that I think, to your point, with all these different feelings people are having about police brutality or whatever it is in the world, I mean, you can spread this message far and wide, I think we can do some real good.
I think that's very true. And what was the name of that organization again? You said Newly.
Sure, it's New Leash on Life USA, and they are a fantastic organization. They even help place the inmates in jobs when they've been released, and they have really solid dog grooming, dog training skills, very practical things that we all need when we're looking for jobs.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate what you do.
Thank you so much for your call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brian and Doug.
Hello.
Hi, it's you. Did you have a question or comment for Brian and Doug?
Well, I just kind of have some praise and some comments for these gentlemen and what they're doing. Based on my history with dogs, when I was a little kid, my father was a violent alcoholic and would brutalize the family. And I used to climb out my bedroom window and go sleep in the doghouse with the family dog. And I can tell you that it brought me great comfort, and I'm probably alive today because of that comfort. And I think that them bringing these dogs into a prison like that gives some of these inmates a chance to experience love, possibly for the first time, unconditional love. And that's a huge therapy item right there. And I just praise them. Anything to do with dogs, I'm in.
Well, that's great. I appreciate your comment, and I'm sure Brian and Doug do as well.
All right. You all have a great day, and thanks for your work. I'm really enjoying your program.
Thanks so much for your call. So,
thank you, sir.
So, Brian and Doug, so the program and the film, I think it's safe to say, wouldn't generate the emotional power and sense of triumph that it does if these dogs didn't, that we meet and follow, didn't find forever homes. Can you talk a little bit about how the adoptions work under the Don't Throw Us Away programs, and how long a dog actually was with one of the inmate dog handlers before the adoption period kicks in?
Sure. The dogs typically stay there 2 to 3 months, which is a good amount of time to get, you know, a strong bond and also to get them basic training. And one of the reasons why it's not longer is because they want to get more dogs to pass through the system and adopt them out. So
sure.
The faster they can do it, the better. And then ultimately the adopters are vetted the way any one of us would be vetted when we work with a rescue group. You know, there's a home visit usually, and you go and you visit the shelter. Actually, let me go back, because what happens is the dogs are brought from the prison to a shelter where the people can go from seeing the dogs online to now actually meeting them, since they can't actually go to the prison. And if all goes well, then they go ahead with the adoption. And that was actually a very cool part about Don't Throw Us Away, was that it was funded by the adoption fees. Michelle, the founder of the program, won a grant, and so it was all funded by her and by her adoption. She never got any money from the state to run this program. So hats off to her for being able to pull that off.
Is that true still to this day, or by now has someone helped fund that program?
No, she's actually transitioning to working with at-risk youth facilities. She wants to really expand the program.
Okay.
So, yeah, so the last we checked with her, that's where she's heading in that direction. But for the entirety of, you know, the 4 or 5 years she's been working at, with the prison system, it's all been run by her and by her adoption, you know, what she charges for adoption.
Wow, that's amazing that it's able to be that sort of self-sustaining.
Yeah, and you know, I think there were donations made. She's a nonprofit, so... But donations of more like, you know, dog beds or treats or things
sure.
like that. But yeah. So, but that's the process. And then of course, trying to eliminate the boomerang effect where dogs go to a home for a week and then come back, you know, they want to find good solid homes. And to that end, we actually, were able to track down, Sadie, and that's one of our DVD extras. We have an update on Sadie and where she is today and you know, she's living in a loving home, and we see a day in the life of Sadie, which is great to see.
That is really great, because I have to say, unless I just missed it in the main film itself, when we do have the whole kind of adoption section, I wasn't sure that Sadie was adopted. I mean, there was kind of more prominent play, it seemed like, or maybe, like I say, I just missed it for at least some of the other dogs that were part of this ongoing story in the film. And I thought, oh my God, you can't tell me Sadie wasn't adopted. I want to like jump through the screen and adopt her myself or do something. So then later when it turned out she was, I thought, okay, now we're talking, because like you said earlier, I mean, she's really, it'd be hard not to just be sort of captivated by her emotionally, just with her story and those eyes, and what a sweet girl. So so it's great to hear that she's continues to be in a happy, loving home like that.
Yeah, it's awesome to see.
So we're just sort of in the final moments, guys. But so, and first of all, I guess we should make a point of saying that as far as people interested in watching the film, who I'm sure there's, upon hearing this, plenty, that on the website, if I'm not mistaken, can't really get into prices and stuff, but I think you can watch or buy the film directly from the website, dogsontheinside.com. And then I think it's also available, what, via iTunes, Amazon Instant Video, Google Play, elsewhere?
You nailed it. Yeah, we're on iTunes and Amazon and Google Play and Vudu. We had a great run on iTunes. We made the top 10 on their documentary chart for a full week, which was very exciting.
Sure.
And you can also go to dogsontheinside.com and buy or rent a digital download of the film, or you can buy the DVD. Which has all those DVD extras that I was just mentioning.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, now that the film is obviously completed and available in all different kinds of forms, what sort of impression or message do you want viewers of this film to come away with? And has it changed at all for you guys just over the process of making the film, completing the film, and then obviously some time has passed even since that point?
Yeah, I'll start off. We would love for people to walk away inspired and feeling hopeful of believing in not only animals' resiliency, but people in general, whether they're inmates or not, they're still human. So if people could believe in second chances amongst everyone, that'd be really phenomenal. And not to mention more prison dog programs like this emerging over, you know, across the country as they have been.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add there?
I think Doug nailed it. I guess I'll just add. I mean, I think with this brilliant, you know, solution to two big problems we have in this country, I would hope people see the benefits of having a dog in your life. It's really transformative, as one of your callers talked about. The unconditional love of a dog really can transform your life. So we hope people see that message in the film. And yes, we want to see a lot more of these start to spread across the country. These prison dog training programs are such a lifesaver for both people and for dogs. So we'd love to have people take that away as well. And as Doug said, hopefully be uplifted. And we really hope people feel good after watching the film.
Very cool. All right. Well, we've been speaking with Brian Cunningham and Douglas Hirup, the co-directors of Dogs on the Inside. Again, the website is dogsontheinside.com. Guys, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. And I guess it goes without saying that I really enjoyed the film. And again, found it kind of a really moving thing that had just all kinds of other issues swirling around beyond just the obvious. So well done.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right.
Great to be on.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
In a moment, we'll have a brief chat with Karen Hubby of the Animal Coalition of Tampa about their unexpected need to vacate their current building and find a new location and continue providing low-cost spay-neuter surgeries and other medical services to dogs and cats. Maybe you'll have a suggestion for them. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Dana Gould with part of a piece called Animal Aftercare on today's Comedy Corner. on Talking Animals.
It's actually a little awkward for me to be up here talking about dogs. I'm not going to kid you. We had four dogs, and then now we have three dogs. Because the dog I wanted to die the least died. I know. Not a big momentum builder at the old comedy show. But, you know, so, it happens. And she was a great girl, 15 and a half, played hard to the bottom of the ninth. Bella, my dog, just loved her to death. Well, no, I don't love her. That would have been terrible. Jeffrey Dahmer loved people to death. I just loved my dog a lot. And I'm with her, all the kids are there, and we're at animal aftercare. Y'all know what happens there. And I have to say, I was very proud of everybody. Everybody had their moment. Everybody knew what was going on. We didn't bend anybody. I was really proud of everybody. And then they all went out to the car. And I was good, you know. I was kind of like hanging together until I actually had to hand her over. And then I fell apart. I started crying like a sissy who was also a girl. And the woman who worked there went, "Sir, it's okay. This happens every day." And all I could think of was, "Then why do you work here? What the f*** is wrong with you? What'd you tell your guidance counselor? Oh, I really like sad people, but I want to be around a lot of dead animals. Well, you got your wish. Congratulations, Dr. Frankenstein, you got your wish."
That was Dana Gould with part of a piece called Animal Aftercare, taken from his album, I Know It's Wrong. Right now, to discuss a tricky situation that's developed for the Animal Coalition of Tampa, or ACT, let's welcome Karen Hubby to Talking Animals. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. So I alluded to it earlier in the show, but let's sort of review a little bit just for some context for listeners that may not know the earlier situation with the building, and then we'll kind of get caught up where we are at the moment.
So in 2012, we moved from where we are now in a temporary clinic on Lemon Street to our beautiful building, 10,000 square foot, on Gilcrest, where we became we did everything what the vet's office does, but for a lot less. We had celebrated our 80,000 spay and neuter surgery there. And then April of the next year, we were arson fired, losing our three house cats, Jazz, Boy, and Mama. We were devastated. We were so within 3 weeks' time. We knew that our public needed us. We service 25,000 animals a year. So we set up again in Lemon Street to service as many people as we can within 3 weeks post-fire. And what we started doing was spays and neuters and shock clinic. And so we have been doing that, as well as had a drop clinic over in the Gilcrest parking lot where we do animal wellness doctor's visit. Then January of this year, we received a notice from the landlord here at Lemon Street that our time is up. As of March 31st, we have to relocate. So we've been waiting to go back into Gilcrest, but it sits untouched since the fire. Because of insurance reasons. So we face homelessness on March 31st right now.
Yeah, a couple of questions then. So was the decision by the owner of the current building a surprise, or the timing of it a surprise, or how did this, sounds like at least, catch you guys a bit unawares?
Oh, we totally were unaware that was going to happen because we kind of had the whole time we were in Gilcrest, this sat vacant, and then we had gone into it, and we thought that we were able to stay here as long as it took us. That was kind of our understanding. We were on a month-to-month kind of lease agreement. So, yeah, it was a big surprise. Him giving us, about 40, 60-day notice, you know, to him legally, that was more than he needed to give us, but that really put a damper on us, obviously.
Right, and I think of something you sort of touched on, but I remember we talked about this on the show a while back, is that there's a whole other complication about insurance and a settlement and what's going to be the disposition of the case where the arson fire destroyed that or greatly damaged that building. So that's, I guess, partly what your snag is in terms of...
Yes, because we had a lease agreement at the other building. So we were, you know, in agreement with the owner there that we would wait. We wanted to go back. It was a beautiful facility. It was large enough. It had a lot of parking. Everybody knew where it was. And we were waiting to get back into that building. But we can't wait, obviously, any longer. And the building is, again, untouched. So we have to come up with a plan. And that's, you know, why we're asking, you know, we're doing a Be a Hero campaign right now. Asking for help from our community. Do you know of a location? Can you give us some monetary help? We have money in the bank from the Strike for Strays and all the wonderful people that came forth after the fire that's been sitting there. But unfortunately, that has to pay for a new x-ray machine, for all the equipment we need to get back into a facility that we've been kind of makeshifting here as we've been in the temporary facility. So the money is there for that, but not there to purchase. And we want to purchase the building so this never happens to us again.
So I guess then people listening, of course, if they're inclined to donate, either way they would go to actampa.org. But I guess what it seems like at least as much what you're seeking at the moment is some ideas, some resources, some things that people might know about some buildings that could be the next home, at least for the moment, for ACT. Is that correct? Sounds like we might have lost Karen. Well, anyway, let me suggest that I believe that was the core of our conversation today was for anybody who might know of buildings that would be available on some basis for ACT to move into, since they do have to vacate the current building shortly. You can go to actampa.org or just put a call
Karen,
into...
Yeah, Karen at AC Tampa will go directly to me.
Oh, good. I thought we lost you, Karen. I had asked you a
no,
question.
I didn't hear any response.
I didn't
hear anything from your side either.
Oh, okay. That's all right. Okay. So, we're sort of out of our time, Karen. But, yeah, so if you want to give an email address and or anything else for people to contact with any suggestions or ideas, that'd be great.
Okay. Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at actampa.org, or a donation page is our regular website, actampa.org.
Okay, great. Well, we wish you good luck. Obviously, you guys have helped all kinds of folks with all kinds of animals over the years. So hopefully you can get a little bit of help now trying to solve this problem. So good luck to you, and thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Now rolling into the noon hour, it constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see guitarist extraordinaire Tommy Emmanuel, who's performing at the Capitol Theater this Friday, March 6th. Because that show is in 2 days, it's too risky, too close to mail those. So we do ask you be able to pick them up if you do try to win the tickets. We'll get to that in a moment here on Talking Animals. Right now, it's time for a couple of animal news and announcements items, including apropos of our talk last week with Don Goldstein about probable greyhound legislation. Comes now, the Senate approves a bill requiring racing tracks to report greyhound injuries. I took this from the Tampa Bay Times. The Florida Senate says greyhound racing tracks and trainers should be required to report injuries to their dogs to the state. The Senate passed a bill unanimously Tuesday requiring the reports. Democratic Eleanor Sobel of Hollywood sponsored the bill. Says she hopes it's the first step towards ending what she called the archaic and barbaric practice of greyhound racing. David Bishop, a spokesman for the Florida Greyhound Association, which includes breeders, owners, and kennel operators, said the bill doesn't go far enough in protecting the racing animals. Reporting at-track dog injuries, collects statistical data, but doesn't do anything to prevent injuries or deaths, Bishop said. The House hasn't yet considered the bill. Also on a legal level, or legislative at least, notice here, headline, fate of thousands of monkeys in the hands of Florida judge. There will be a hearing tomorrow that will take place just 1 week after PETA made the shocking announcement that the number of animals being used each year in federally funded labs rose from approximately 75,000 in 1997 to the 129,000 in 2012. So there is a hearing tomorrow. Basically, there's officials in Henry County, Florida, and who greenlit a 32-acre monkey breeding facility without informing the community or holding a public hearing. And the monkeys, perhaps needless to say, are destined really for testing, experimental testing. And doing that without a public hearing is required by law. So the Animal Legal Defense Fund stepped in. So if you're anywhere around or have people who are that might object and be heard on this, you can meet at 12 noon tomorrow. This is tomorrow, March 5th, at the Henry County Planning and Zoning Department at 640 South Main Street, La Belle, Florida, 33935. And a journalist, Jane Velez Mitchell, will be there conducting on-camera interviews, etc. So very, very important. If you can lend your voice, show up in any way to help call attention to this or stop it, please do. Looking ahead a little bit, the concert for Friends of Strays that we mentioned once or twice before is coming up Sunday, March 15th. It's going to be at Cafe Charlie. It's going to feature the Rick Hart Band, Sandy Atkinson and the True Loves, the Fabulous Lint Roller, Sarasota Slim Band, Ellie Lee, and Blues Fury. Again, this is for Friends of Strays, founded in 1978. Nonprofit no-kill organization that provides services to abandoned cats and dogs in Pinellas County. So there'll be all kinds of fun and music there. Again, that's Sunday, March 15th from 1 to 6 p.m. at Cafe Charlie. You can find out more about the event or about Friends of Strays at friendsofstrays.com. And also looking ahead, on Saturday, March 21st, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay will host the 28th annual Bark in the Park fundraising walk for the animals and pet-friendly festival from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park in downtown Tampa. So it's a huge, huge granddaddy, I think, of the animal events in this area. Rescues and adoptions, food and beer trucks, live music, pet-friendly vendors, celebrity MCs, doggy fun zone, photo ops, and more. So find out more about that by going to humanesocietytampa.org. Looking ahead, too, the Humane Society of Pinellas has their Spring Pet Fest coming up April 11th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Carillion Parkway in St. Pete. And again, a huge array of adoptables and food and drinks and music and stuff. And so you can go to humanepinellas.org or humanesocietyofpinellas.org for information about that. And I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. And also, this the prize for this, a pair of tickets to see guitarist extraordinary Tommy Emmanuel, performed at the Capitol Theater this Friday, March 6th, would need to be picked up here at the station before the concert on the 6th. So please only play our Name That Animal tune game if you're able to come by and pick up the tickets before Friday. So if you are the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, those tickets could be yours. It's Name That Animal tune from a listener suggestion, no less, on Talking Animals.
After the turn of the century, in the clear blue skies over Germany, came a roar and a thunder men have never heard, like the screaming sound of a big war bird. Up in the sky, a man in a plane, buried by great coffin was his.
We will take any guesses off the air, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Loy again is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, March 11th, when my guest will be Don Anthony from the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida. I hope you'll join me for that. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our newsletter and find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other fascinating news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Kind animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Wiggy-Watchy, and beyond, community conscious radio. Thanks so much for listening. Be good again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.